Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Gerald Hart, number 18280, represent Raul and Jurissa Diaz against Mr. Hamburg. This is a dog bite case, a vicious dog bite case, and if you read the records, you'll see that Mr. Diaz attempted to kill the dog when the dog attacked him. He received serious lacerations, had to go to the emergency room, had scar and surgery later. The verdict here, we allege, is not logical because there's no evidence to support the verdict. First of all, the jury awarded $2,000 under the strict liability dog statute. That I have the statute here. That is statute 1321.124. And Mr. Henson said in his reply brief that all the hospital emergency room bills were paid in the jury verdict. Well, the hospital bill of University Hospital was $1,967.90. The university physician's bill, the same date, is $971. So the $2,000 really didn't cover the entire amount of the hospital bill, even though he said it did, in fact, show it didn't. Second of all, Your Honor, the verdict, again, in favor of Ms. Diaz, the question was, did the dog have vicious or tendencies? Yes. Did defendant Hobbs know that the dog had vicious tendencies? No. Did Raul Diaz have injuries and damages? Yes. What was the defendant negligent? Yes. Was negligence the cause of the injuries? Yes. Your Honor, throughout the trial of this case, numerous witnesses came forth and testified that they knew the dog was vicious, told Mr. Hobbs the dog was vicious, and this is five witnesses. There are Mrs. Diaz, Phil Garcia, Mr. Joe McCarthy told Mr. Hobbs' dog was loose and ran down the street. Evan Alexander told Hobbs' dog was running loose. Jennifer Anderson told dog was out, needed to be put in the backyard, and told Larry, the roommate.
Well, let me stop you there. The dog may be unruly and may be jumping over the fence, but why is that evidence so compelling that the dog was vicious that we disregard the jury's verdict?
Well, we disregard the verdict for a simple reason, Your Honor. The fact that during voir dire, I had asked the insurance question, and I had said, and I can read, I have the transcript right here.
Well, Mr. Hart, before you move on to that, I don't know if you're answering Judge Webb's question. I mean, here you've got, as you say, there are five witnesses talking about the dog running around the neighborhood. You do have the dog's owner saying, I didn't know the dog was vicious. But now, you may argue all day long, that was not credible. He's not credible. But that's for the jury to decide, isn't it?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
So why couldn't the jury reject all five of the witnesses you just named and believe Mr. Hart instead and say, we didn't know the dog was vicious?
Simple reason, Your Honor, that they did not award the entire amount of emergency room hospital. And I can tell Your Honor that when I asked the insurance question, and I said, I have it right here, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why the jury was thinking. I had, during voir dire, I said, are any of you officers, directors, or policyholders of the defendant's insurance company, State Farm? And then Mr. Henson approached the bench and said that was a violation of CRE 411 and that it shouldn't be asked. And the court said, even though one of the prospective jurors answered yes, I'm insured by State Farm, the court said, I gave the court the case of Smith versus District Court, 907 Pacific 2nd, 611. And I said, Judge, here's the case that says I can ask this question. The judge says, I don't read it that way. Mr. Henson said, don't read it that way. As a matter of fact, in Mr. Henson's reply brief, he says, I overstepped the bounds by saying the insurance company of the defendant. I went too far. But yet the Supreme Court said I can ask that question. So I asked that question. The judge then, upon a motion for mistrial by Mr. Henson, denied the motion for mistrial. Instruct the jury, you will not consider the matter of insurance in your deliberations. It has nothing to do with the case. So I was, in fact, prohibited from inquiring of the respective jurors whether they were insured by State Farm.
Well, let me ask you, Mr. Hart, what in Smith versus District Court allowed, I get Smith says you can ask the insurance question.
Yes, Your Honor.
What in that case, it says, you can say, you know, highlight the defendant's insurance question. You could have asked, do any of you work for State Farm? To the jurors, right? I mean, or are you officers, directors, are you insured by State Farm? You could have asked that. Smith makes clear, well, the jurors may have been able to figure out from that that there's liability insurance. But the difference, it seems to me, is that you highlighted the fact the defendant's insurance company. So what in Smith, and I'll acknowledge there's some language that maybe will fuzz in Smith, but what do you see in Smith that lets you say the defendant was insured? As opposed to just asking. Go ahead.
It says here in Smith, it is well established in Colorado that the insurance question, whether prospective jurors are officers, directors, or policyholders of the defendant's insurance carrier, may be asked by counsel during voir dire. So I was, in fact, following the Smith case during voir dire. All right? The judge then precluded me from going any further, even with one of the jurors said, I have State Farm.
Did you challenge that juror for cause?
No, Your Honor.
Did you challenge that juror for
cause? I couldn't ask any further questions.
We already knew she was insured by State Farm. Did you challenge her?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Didn't challenge her. Court instructed me not to mention insurance anymore, and I was prohibited from requiring the balance of the jurors to question of insurance. So therefore, we went to trial not knowing whether any of the jurors had State Farm insurance.
Well, you knew one of them had, and you'd left her on the jury.
No, I didn't. She lived on the jury, I don't think. I read the verdict form. The name was Ramirez in the verdict. I couldn't see whether a Ramirez signed the verdict. I have the verdict here. Myers. No, there was no Ramirez on that jury. So she was taken off, maybe on Mr. Henson.
Okay.
But who knows whether the other six jurors had State Farm as insurance, whether they were officers, directors, policyholders of State Farm. I had no knowledge. I couldn't ask them any question.
Well, let me ask you, Mr. Hart, I'm sorry, I want to just get on the same page as you on the Smith case. As I understand it, and I see where you're reading, Smith, I have it in front of me myself.
Okay.
Smith dealt with the motion in limine. And the motion in limine, as I understood it, requested the district court prohibit plaintiff's counsel from asking potential jurors if any of them were officers, directors, and policyholders of State Farm, and to prohibit the plaintiff's counsel from mentioning State Farm. As I understand it, the motion in limine didn't talk about the defendant's insurance company. It just said State Farm. Am I misreading that? Or are you aware of something else in that case?
I'm reading around in footnote 4, which says you can ask a defendant's insurance carrier, maybe asked by counsel on voir dire.
Yeah, but I'm asking about the facts of that case. The facts dealt, as I understood it, dealt with a motion in limine just saying you can't ask if they were in a policyholder, et cetera, of State Farm.
Well, I believe in the Smith case, the court, I think it was Pasco County or something, had a rule that you cannot ask the insurance question at all. And they petitioned the Supreme Court to allow us to ask that insurance question. And there was one case where the attorney cited the wrong insurance company, and the court said, this doesn't matter. You've got a response to your question. But I was sort of prohibited at that point from either going forward with any insurance company. The court told me the motion for mistrial was denied, and I was instructed not to mention insurance at all. I couldn't go any further. So, there could have been six jurors who all worked or policyholders of State Farm. I have no idea whether they were adjusters, whether they had prior cases, prior accidents, allegiance, whether their premiums would go up as a result of this case. I have no idea. I could not allege or assert a preemptive challenge, a challenge or cause, because we're looking for a fair and impartial jury. I had no idea at that point whether we had a fair or impartial jury. Did not know, because I could not ask any questions related to insurance. And I was reading, and under peculiar interest, Smith case. The Smith case specifically says that you can ask that question regarding defendant's insurance company. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, 411 says you cannot mention insurance to prove liability, but you can ask for any other purpose. So we weren't violating any rule of evidence by asking a question as to whether there was insurance by the defendant. Therefore, I felt that the verdict was tainted. You can see right away by awarding $2,000 for a bill that was $2,938.90. So Mr. Diaz didn't even get paid for the emergency room visit that he went to. And like you said, there were plenty of witnesses, but we have here that Mr. Hobbs was continually unable to control his vicious dog. Let it be on, he couldn't keep him, kept jumping. He had to keep him down, he had to chase him down the street. He had a chain on his yard. The dog was running loose. And all that indicated to me, and should have indicated to the jury, that this dog had vicious tendencies. Thank you, Your Honor.
If it pleases the court, my name is Thomas Henson. I represent the defendant, Jeffrey Scott Hobbs. And I am with the law firm Stewart Jorgensen Associates. My bar number is 17837. As it relates to the main issues, as I understand it, is there's one issue as relates to whether or not a jury could reasonably conclude that the dog wasn't vicious. And in this particular instance, the plaintiff himself called Mr. Hobbs as a witness and read his deposition testimony before the jury. So it was his witness he called. Mr. Hobbs has a condition that would have prohibited him from being at trial, Huntington's chorea. So deposition was taken and read into the evidence. Twice during the deposition, when he asked Mr. Hobbs whether or not the dog was vicious, he indicated no, the dog was not vicious. So there was testimony as to his belief that the dog was not vicious, and that supports the finding of the jury that Mr. Hobbs did not know that the dog was vicious. Now, they brought in a lot of witnesses that discussed the dog running freely in the neighborhood and things of this nature. However, there's a jury instruction that the weight of the evidence isn't necessarily determined by the number of jurors, rather the number of witnesses that address that particular issue. So there was evidence, in fact, brought on by plaintiff's counsel as it relates to the dog not being vicious, which is consistent with the jury's verdict. As it relates to the issue of damages, the hospital bill was approximately $2,000.
Well, it was $3,000. So, I mean, it was the 1900 some odd plus 900 some odd. So how do we square, and I recognize the standard of review here, how do we square what the jury, how the jury got the 2,000? Can they just pick a number out of the air? Was there a reason for them to disregard one of the bills? So, I mean, you said in your brief it was about $3,000. Or $2,000. It's $1,000 off of that, so I'm a little troubled by that argument.
Well,
how do we square that?
The actual ER visits, I believe, were about $2,000. The additional $1,000 relates to emergency room physician bills. So I think that's where that distinction relates. In terms of how do you square that, perhaps there wasn't evidence submitted as it relates to the additional $1,000 for the emergency room physicians. I don't see any evidence in the record that discusses that one way or another. The other...
Weren't the bills in the record?
I haven't seen it in the record here, and in terms of the record before the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
Additionally, the jury could conclude that they can determine the value based upon what they think the reasonable value of the services are. And there's no prescription that they're forced to necessarily go along with what was billed to determine reasonableness.
Did you argue to the jury that some of the approximately 3,000 in ER expenses was not reasonable?
Your Honor, I don't honestly remember,
okay,
you know, making that argument to the jury in closing. I don't. But I think that there is evidence to suggest at least the hospital bills were very close to $2,000, and then the physician's bill of something like $900 would have been the additional amount close to $3,000. In this particular case, there was a huge absence of treatment for nearly 3 months following the emergency room visit. Then he was started to treat with some regularity. So the jury certainly could have determined that whatever damages he had were solely related to the emergency room visit. Now, the additional issue is one of the insurance question. And I think it's pretty well established in Colorado with the case of Smith, as well as the Smith case in particular. And as you discussed, that does address the fact that the insurance question can be asked.
I think doesn't the language read literally authorize the actual question that's asked here?
I think it does if it's read literally. But I think the crux of the decision, and as the court pointed out, this is a case where it was a motion in limine, and they specifically asked to not be allowed to ask the question as to who is an employee, officer, director of State Farm Insurance. The court granted that, and then there was a writ of prohibition that was filed. And basically, the Supreme Court said, and I think this is where it's really clear that is maybe a literal reading, but it's not what the court was intending, and I think most attorneys probably realize that in the way this is conducted in the past. But it says at the back of the very bottom of the opinion, page 613, we therefore hold that the district court erroneously prohibited plaintiff's counsel from asking whether prospective jurors were officers, directors, or policyholders of State Farm during voir dire. So it said specifically what it thought was wrong, and it didn't say anything about defendant's insurance carrier, State Farm. And that's the rub. That's where I think Mr. Hart's very literal reading of this is why he believes that you can say the actual insurance carrier and identify with the defendant. I think that's clearly erroneous.
Well, let's assume you're right. Didn't the trial court still go too far in prohibiting plaintiff's counsel from making any further inquiries into the prospective jurors' possible relationships with the insurance company?
Well, I think at that point, given the what the court I think saw as a fairly egregious error, was well within its discretion to control the voir dire, and I would instruct the court, or I would cite for the court, Hauser versus Earhart, and that is 506 P. Second 751. And it basically says in that particular case, the mention of two or more insurance by specific name by plaintiff's counsel in personal injury action is not prejudicial per se. Whether it is prejudicial or not is a discretionary decision for the trial court to make, based upon not only upon evidence before the court, but upon intangible elements of good and bad faith and the demeanor of counsel, which can be best observed and evaluated by the trial court. So I think the trial court, it has discretion when something like this occurs to remedy the situation as best as it sees fit, not only based upon the tangible evidence, but also, as the court mentioned, how is it the intangible elements of good and bad faith in the demeanor of counsel. It was quite clear that Judge Moss, when Mr. Hart argued that he is capable of, or it's proper to ask this question, based upon the Smith matter, that the court quickly addressed, and this is in the record, that he is misreading the Smith case. The Smith case simply says that you can ask about the insurance question of the, whatever that might be for the defendant, but you cannot specifically identify the defendant as having that particular insurance. So I think the court was well within its discretion to cure that in light of the request for a mistrial by advising the jury that they should disregard the question of insurance. I'm not sure how the court would have better addressed it at that point, because at that point, you know, so to speak, the cat was out of the bag, but the defendant was insured by State Farm.
Let me ask you if I can, I guess, respond to Mr. Hart's point about Rule 411 and its limits. Obviously, this case presents to us a question of what's the reach, or one question, what's the reach of Smith? I'm trying to figure that out. Why, what's the problem, and I don't mean this facetiously, what is the problem in law with asking about the defendant's insurer when Rule 411 says evidence of insurance is admissible as long as it's not admitted for purposes of liability or wrongdoing? So, you know, why can't you ask that?
Well, I think it's a balancing question, Your Honor, and it's to the law 411 does prohibit insurance as it relates to, you know, the negligence or liability of the party. And it goes on to say that it can be admitted for purposes of agency, bias, things of that nature. I think you can determine bias without presenting that it's the defendant's insurance carrier. You can get as much information during voir dire without having to identify that it is the defendant's insurance carrier, which possibly could then influence the jury. Now, many jurors are sophisticated enough nowadays that they would know that just without even identifying it as defendant's insurance carrier. However, some would not, and surprisingly a large number would not necessarily make that connection. But the purpose of voir dire is to try to find a fair jury, and that's why they allow the question that Smith discusses and some Rains discusses in terms of asking about insurance, but it never specifically says that you can identify the defendant as having that particular insurance company. There's a Colorado lawyer article that was written in 1996 that really discusses Rule 411 and this issue of the insurance question. And it states, thus prospective jurors may properly be asked, either individually or collectively, whether they have any relationship with a named insurer. In making this inquiry, however, counsel may not comment on the relationship between the named insurer and the party it insures. For example, a plaintiff's attorney could properly pose the following question during voir dire: are any of you officers, directors, or policyholders of State Farm? However, it would be improper for the attorney to describe State Farm as the insurance company that will pay any judgment rendered against the defendant in this case. Well, he didn't go as far as saying that, but I think the implication here is, in how most courts have interpreted this, is, yeah, asking the insurance question is proper. However, it's improper to identify who the insurance company insures.
Thank you.
Unless there are any further questions, I have no further comment. Thank you very much.
Your Honor, if you look at the notes on the Smith case, note number 6, it says here, it rains, cover, it rains, and gives a cite. This court permitted counsel in a personal injury action to ask potential jurors whether they were related to the defendant's insurance carrier. In that case, we say plaintiff's attorney, lawyer, consultant, latitude. Okay. And then we have, there's two end paragraphs of this case. Furthermore, this court has held that counsel not only has the right to inquire during voir dire if any prospective juror has a relationship to the defendant's insurance company, but may inquire into such relationship if one exists. I was foreclosed that opportunity to inquire if any of the sitting jurors had State Farm and what was the relationship to State Farm, whether an officer, director, policyholder, couldn't go there. Second, the last paragraph, in the case before us, a plaintiff's counsel wishes to ask prospective jurors if they have a relationship to the defendant's insurance carrier, State Farm. According to our precedent, counsel may ask the insurance question during voir dire in order to determine the prejudices and biases of prospective jurors. We therefore hold that district court erroneously prohibited plaintiff's counsel from asking whether prospective jurors, officers, directors, counsels of State Farm during voir dire. So here you have explanation saying that by prohibiting the attorney from asking, only ask State Farm, that was error. The attorney can ask the prospective insurers whether they have insurance at State Farm, the defendant's insurance carrier. So I relied on this case in doing my voir dire. Secondly, Your Honor, and everyone knows you can't go to the hospital without a doctor being there. So it was not argued that the hospital bill of 1900 was not reasonable and the doctors were not reasonable. That was never argued. I think it was a some verdict that the jury figured, let's give him something, let's give him $2,000 and that'll be it.
Are the jurors not allowed to do that? I mean, the standard of review, as I understand it, is that the verdict has to be grossly or manifestly inadequate, or so small as to indicate clearly and definitely that the jury neglected to consider evidence.
Yes.
That is the standard. So why can't, I mean, as you said, we all try a lot of cases.
You can't go to a hospital without a doctor.
Sure, but the jury here didn't say zero. And there's case law that said if the jury said zero, you'd have a pretty strong argument.
But
the jurors, why can't the jurors just say, I think 2,000 is reasonable from what I'm seeing, hypothetically, and no disrespect to your client, of course. The juror could say, I don't believe this man. He's overreaching. He's asking for all these damages, and he's not credible with me. I think 2,000 is fair based on what I heard. Why couldn't the jury do that?
Because the hospital was an evidence. They had no alternative, either deny it or pay it, one or the other. You can't cut a bill in half if there's no testimony regarding half value. The jury said, well, give him 2,000, but it was based on nothing, really. It wasn't based on a $1,900 bill, nor based on a $900 bill from physicians. They just threw out 2,000 and get rid of him. Secondly, Your Honor, the court should have granted a mistrial and cleared the error and made a ruling so we know one way or the other what we can do. This way, we were tainted from the start. Mr. Henson objected to that question. The court instructed me not to mention insurance any further. So I was
You didn't join in the motion for mistrial.
No, I didn't. I didn't have to because I knew it would deny it. So I didn't have to get the judge excited. They do get excited, you know. So the court should have granted mistrial, and as to the value, you know, there has to be a legitimate value described by jurors. Here they had no basis. They just said we'll award 2,000 when there was no factual basis for that award. Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course. When the